Welcome to another episode of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler, and today is Monday, August 3rd. This week, we examine an article from the July issue of the journal Oncology entitled Oncology Clinical Trials During the COVID-19 Pandemic. The article was written by Drs. Aline Lara, Dennis Jardim, and Diogo Bastos. To get a better understanding of the piece, I spoke with Dr. Lara and Dr. Bastos regarding their work on this review article. Again, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me. I was hoping we could start with, you know, just a brief summary of the review article that you both contributed on.
Okay, so as we all know, COVID-19 has affected over 15 million people worldwide and has caused over 600,000 deaths up to now. Although there's not much data, we know that cancer seems to be a risk for contracting COVID-19 and also a higher risk of poor outcomes, including death from the viral infection. We know that clinical trials currently play an essential role in cancer care, and it represent an opportunity to access different treatment modalities, such as immunotherapy and targeted therapies, or even other options that will eventually become available in the future. However, we know that clinical trial participants, they often need to go to the hospital at a higher frequency. So the schedule of a patient being treated in a clinical trial is much less flexible than of a patient receiving standard of care treatment. And these requirements, of course, present concerns for patients, institutions, and sponsors during the COVID-19 pandemic. So given all these factors, conducting oncology clinical trials became a real challenge during the pandemic. And the focus of our article was to discuss measures to optimize clinical oncology trials during COVID-19 pandemic, following, of course, regulatory agencies' guidance and maintaining patient safety as a priority.
And so what were some of the key takeaways you found from this article?
So as just said by Dr. Bastos, during this COVID-19 pandemic, the patient safety should be a priority. Following the regulatory agency's guidance and local epidemiology, the research center should consider some changes on conduction of clinical trials. Some of these changes are discussing the enrollment of new patients on ongoing clinical trials. As we know, many institutions have halted patient enrollment during the pandemic. And of course, sponsors should carefully evaluate the feasibility of enrolling patients into ongoing clinical trials and also the feasibility of new clinical trials. The risk versus benefit of new or continued accruals should be discussed with the staff at the investigational sites. Also, consider remote methods such as remote monitoring and remote safety visits. When considering these methods, it is important to take into account the patient's disabilities and other limitations. It's important also to evaluate different methods for distribution of investigational products and, depending on the local epidemiology, even drawing blood tests and imaging outside of the research center. The patients should always be informed about the changes on clinical trials and how these changes affect their care. Staff should be trained, and protocol deviations should be avoided, and if impossible, communicated to the Institutional Review Board or Independent Ethics Committee. Importantly, the final goal should be keeping patients safe.
And so with this piece overall, you know, what was the process like putting it together, and ultimately, what did you hope to accomplish with the final version of the article?
So writing a manuscript regarding the pandemic exactly when it's happening, it of course is challenging. So there's lack of objective data regarding this subject. And for that reason, we tried to collect data on clinicaltrials.gov website to demonstrate the importance of reviewing conduction of oncology clinical trials during COVID-19 pandemic. Of course, we also looked for a regulatory agency's guidance and guidelines and gathered their orientations along the worldwide publications and mostly local experiences. With all that information, we tried to summarize the most common challenges faced on oncology clinical trials currently, of course, along with recommendations of possibilities to deal with them and strategies to try to overcome these challenges.
And so in that data collection phase that you mentioned, was there anything that you found that was particularly surprising? And then overall, how did that information influence the rest of the piece?
So we found very interesting data. We searched for recruiting international trials using the keyword cancer, first posted on each month from January to May in 2019. And then we did the same search on 2020. And we found a almost 42% reduction of recruiting clinical trials in oncology in 2020 compared to last year. And these numbers reinforce the importance of discussing the adoption of special measures on oncology clinical trials during the pandemic.
And so looking at the article specifically, you included guidelines from the FDA and European Medicines Agency. Could you talk a little bit about those and what they say in regards to conducting clinical trials amidst the pandemic? And, you know, what are some of the key recommendations and how did it influence your analysis?
So several recommendations of FDA and the European Medicine Agencies are actually coincident, since the main objective of the guidance is to maintain patients safe and try to minimize the pandemic effects on their treatment. That being said, both agencies recommend assessing the pertinence of enrolling new patients in clinical trials, considering, of course, the local circumstances. Remote methods are also encouraged, respecting patients' disabilities and limitations. The FDA states that the documentation of remote monitoring should be the same as the on-site monitoring. The European Medicine Agency raises attention to the need of remonitoring eventually. Regarding the distribution of investigational products, both agencies allow delivering investigational products directly to patients' home. It is important to emphasize that these measures can generate protocol deviations. These protocol deviations should be considered when locking the study's database. FDA highlights that changes in protocol may be implemented without the IRB approval, if necessary, to keep patients safe, remembering to communicate the IRB as soon as possible. The European Medicine Agency recommends to periodically analyze any protocol deviations and the need for protocol amendments. Both agencies recommend describing the adopted measures and the protocol deviations on the study report. Mainly, all the recommendations have the ultimate goal of keep patients safe.
So even though formalized guidelines have been published by these regulatory agencies, the article explains that research institutions should really write their own guidelines. Why is that, and what is the benefit of an institution writing its own guidelines?
Yeah, it is important to consider the local COVID-19 epidemiology, the regional policies for prevention and control of COVID-19, and along with the profile of the ongoing clinical trials in the institution. The institution's guidelines should include recommendations that fit these local characteristics, prioritizing patient safety.
And so, is there anything you found in your research regarding clinical trials, whether it be specific practices, guidelines, or trends that have emerged during the pandemic that you see continuing into a post-COVID world?
Yeah, sure. Probably one of the most promising strategies adopted during the pandemic that will last after this period is the remote monitoring and other remote methods such as telemedicine and safety visits. They have had a greater acceptance in between patients and clinicians, and they probably will last.
And so is there anything else I haven't asked regarding the article that you wanted to mention here?
So recently, after the article was published, we performed a new search on the clinicaltrials.gov website to see if the number of recruiting interventional oncology trials started to rise, especially that several countries actually now there have a declining numbers of COVID-19 infections. So in June 2020, 177 studies were first posted on the clinical trials website, compared with 268 on June last year. So clearly we are still far from last year's numbers, but it's important to that they increased compared with the about 100 clinical trials registered in May this year. So we're starting to see more clinical trials to open for recruitment as the pandemic numbers start to decline. So with the advances on treatments and developing of vaccination, especially for COVID-19, so we all expect for that to happen, we hope that this trend of increasing recruiting studies will continue and patients will be soon able to return to the normal routine of clinical trials.
Well, those are all the questions I had for you. Thank you both so much for your time and your insight on the article. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
For a peer-reviewed perspective, I spoke with Dr. Mehmet Kapoor of the Morrison Cancer Center. Dr. Kapoor gave his insight on navigating clinical trials during the pandemic and the need to improve the clinical trial system as a whole. I was hoping we could start. So what were some of your main takeaways from the review article entitled Oncology Clinical Trials During the COVID-19 Pandemic?
Yes, this has been a very fascinating topic with the emergence of the COVID infection. So the clinical trial system already suffering from a lot of regulatory hurdles, as well as the lack of people to get enrolled and the reimbursement and the funding. And I serve at the ASCO Research Community Forum Task Force, and we have been battling with this clinical trials being so hard to get the attention of doctors as well as the patients. Now, when the COVID came in, it was like a crash on something already trying to grow and get planted, and it just almost killed the whole thing. And there has been amazing amount of publications on this topic starting as soon as the February or March of this month. And then FDA came up with some guidance to help industry as well as the National Cancer Institute. And I'm an oncologist. I'm looking at into from the perspective of oncology trials, but I realize that there is all kind of trials as well as a medical device kind of clinical trials and research. So COVID just brought them to a grinding halt.
And so you touched on a number of these shortcomings in the perspective you wrote entitled Ineptitude of Clinical Trials System Highlighted by COVID-19 Pandemic. I was hoping you could go even further with some of those shortcomings, you know, what you've seen in the clinical trial system just generally and how COVID-19 has really turned those problems up to 11.
United States is so strong in science, and we look at the basic science, if you look at it, because there is less regulatory burden in that. We are way ahead of the world. But when it comes to clinical trials, meaning enrolling the patients, we are paralyzed by the regulatory. And that was evident in COVID. There was a Nature publication. They did a beautiful proteomic study published just around February. They identified the COVID-19 virus proteins, there was host proteins, there was viral proteins, and they identified, I believe, 250 something compounds, and then they identified 40 or something existing drugs that affects the virus. But yet, none of these have been put onto clinical trials and have come with a result yet. And I'm really puzzled that COVID-19 is just one simple virus, and scientists know the virus inside out. They know the protein sequence, the RNA sequence of it. and they have come up with so many basic science discoveries, yet we cannot take a simple drug out there already has gone through the phase 1-2 trials. You don't need to do that and ready to use. And the COVID is an infection within 14 days, you know what happens, as opposed to cancer. You have to wait your progression-free survival, overall survival. Is this real? Is this not real? Here is crystal clear, as simple as it is. Your endpoints are well-defined and available. Yet, we still don't have, other than remdesivir trial, which is even like far from being a great trial, there is none. And by now, we should have tested 40 or 50 drugs that show activity in the lab against the virus. And we should have had yay or nay answer just like that. Why we are not? Because of that regulatory burden, the ethics, the Helsinki rules, the HIPAA violations, the consent forms, the IRB, and all that is just became much more clear. I remember the story, the emperor has no clothes, and I believe most people have heard that story. And it is just like that. Clinical trial system has no clothes. It just, COVID infection made it so clear that emperor has no clothes. We need to really, really take it very serious, look at our regulatory system and use this disaster as a leverage and improve our existing inaccurate, insufficient clinical trial system. That's my thought on this.
And so with all of those issues that you mentioned, what are some changes that you would recommend that would help to enact some positive change to the system that currently exists?
And it would be wonderful if we start with regulatory burden of clinical trials. So this comes from all the way to writing the clinical trial, getting it approved by the FDA, putting through an IRB. And in the old days, it was even worse. Every institution had their own IRB and they tried to get with the NCI central IRB. It was an improvement, but still there's so much delays and so much convoluted, repetitious paperwork. Then there is consent forms like a telephone book. And then there is HIPAA. Over interpretation of privacy law, I would suggest that clinical research has to be exempt from HIPAA law. There is common sense, there is privacy, there is HIPAA violation. And as I said, if we are going for the greater good of humanity, if we are trying to discover and make people's lives better, we have to have exemptions. When there is a research protocol, the HIPAA law should not apply or should apply to the lowest level possible. One of the biggest hurdles of clinical research in the United States, the HIPAA law, and it was intended to do something else, but it became a monstrous, deleterious effect on clinical trials. Then there is this adverse event reporting system. It should be simplified. And there is a contract research organizations telling which is accepted by insurance, which is not accepted by insurance, which is covered, which is not covered. There is so much there that needs to be simplified, but it will take participation from all stakeholders, just not one institution, one place. This will include the government. This would include the professional societies. This would include the FDA. This would include the research organizations, industry, and NCI. Industry people are much more pragmatic and vigilant. Instead of dealing with the United States, they go run their trials overseas because the rules and regulations are less. And then we have the science and everything in the United States, but when it comes to putting it into action with the patients, we are way behind the rest of the world. And that's because of the too much regulations in this country.
So since the outbreak of the pandemic in the United States around maybe February or March, have you noticed any kind of trends or adaptations that have been put in place to help the feasibility of conducting trials right now that you feel could carry over to be an effective strategy in a post-COVID world?
Yes, this was the topic of our survey at ASCO Research Committee that I serve on one of their task forces. And it turns out that 60% of the time they did report that it was their institutions had developed and instituted formal policies to related to COVID-19 pandemic. And this was implementation of remote patient care interactions, including patient review of symptoms through telehealth visits. And then 3/4 of programs mandated remote work by research staff and implemented remote site initiation visits, 71% remote monitoring by sponsors. Most of the time, what they reported, including me, I was part of this survey, and approximately half of the programs reported prioritizing enrollment for certain clinical trials holding, like screening trials, or there's a certain type of cancer trials, cancer care delivery trials through the NCORP. They have kind of decreased priority on these trials, and they give priority to the trials that would not affect the patient's safety, but also they would answer the important questions. But overall, I find it very symbolic, not very big changes happening yet. The welfare of the data, welfare of the patient. This is the two tenets of clinical trials. If you put a system in place that you do not jeopardize the welfare of the patient and you do not jeopardize the welfare of the data, the rest is all detailed. And I wish there was a smart, pragmatic government system that would say, okay, this is a clinical trial. The priority is patient's safety and welfare, and then data's accuracy. The rest, I don't care about the legal, the HIPAA, the IRB, you name it, the Helsinki. I'm not saying they are unimportant, but what I'm saying is put your priorities top and do not jeopardize all these so-called well-intended laws and regulations that they are trying to protect the patients or protect the data, yet they are making it much more complicated and jeopardized as opposed to what they are intended to do. If they could look into what is the really important here and then adjust everything else and give exemptions to clinical trials, that's my dream, but of course, we can just dream.
So reversing course a little bit, the review article mentions that formalized guidelines have been published by regulatory agencies to help navigate the coronavirus pandemic and clinical trials. But the authors explain that research institutions should write their own guidelines based off of these formalized ones. Do you agree with that recommendation? And then what is the benefit of an institution writing its own guidelines?
I would prefer that institutions would do their own guidelines because they know their patient population, they know their staff, they know their abilities, capabilities, also they know their shortcomings. And yet, this in this country, again, there is so much rules and regulations, they will not be allowed to do it without showing the compliance with the big regulatory bodies. So FDA did that. It was very early on. They published guidelines for on the conduct of the clinical trials. So my answer to that would be, even if I wanted to come up with my own institution's guidelines, which I would prefer, they would mandate it that it has to be complacent with the FDA guidelines or NCI guidelines. And it is, again, in this country with the system in place, it is just a dream that individual institutions would come up with something and be able to apply it. And I don't mean to say that, oh, we don't need any guidelines from the regulatory, but if the regulatory bodies were pragmatic and smart to know that why we are so much behind and would come up with the realistic and applicable guidelines, the rest of the institutions would adopt them, or they would give the flexibility to individual institutions that even though I am recommending this, the real reason behind it, again, welfare of the patient, welfare of the data, you are okay or you are allowed to modify it as long as you show me that you take care of the real principles. That's what I would prefer. I would prefer all institutions to their own rules based on a regulatory compliance, which is smart, pragmatic, and flexible. And the key is welfare of the data, welfare of the patient.
Dr. Kapoor, thank you so much for your time and your information. I greatly appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter @cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn @cancernetwork.